change the world, change the world.
Oh, yes, we can.
We can change the world, we can change the world, change the world.
We can do it.
From a place of pain, war, and hate.
Good morning. A happy midweek to you. It's Andrea Darlis in for Santita Jackson for a few more days. She's in Paris. We talked to her yesterday. She was with Reverend Jesse Jackson for the Medal of Honor Award that the French President Emmanuel Macron bestowed on Reverend Jackson yesterday. I was thrilled to talk to Santita. She and her family are just having a wonderful and a historical time in Paris. So we have a wonderful show planned for you a little later on this hour. Jerry Riles is going to be with us. Our discussion yesterday about the Olympics got cut short, but the Olympics are underway. Some of the preliminaries are starting, have started today. The opening ceremonies will be on Friday. Jerry's going to be here, and we have a new NBA champion, our neighbors to the north. Jerry's going to be here to talk with us about Milwaukee's big win. Are the Cubs trading Chris Bryant? Will the White Sox win the World Series? Jerry's going to have all those answers for us. Fingers crossed at 6:30. At 7 o'clock, we're going to talk to TJ Crawford with a Garfield Park Right to Wellness Collaborative. A West Side vacant lot, I don't know if you heard this story, will soon become a roller rink and a community plaza. TJ is the brains behind all of it, and he will be with us at 7 o'clock. And we're going to close out the show today with the executive director for the Illinois Environmental Council, Jen Walling, who's going to talk with us about the new infrastructure bill and the energy bill that has just been implemented in the state of Illinois. So lots going on, but first, we are kicking off the show. We're starting out strong from the gate. Paul, thank you for being here, for producing our wonderful show here for Santita and myself. We are going to start off the show with Cliff Nellis, the executive director of the Lawndale Christian Legal Center, and my friend, Cook County Commissioner Dr. Dennis Deere, who's the vice president of organizational health and management for the LCLC. And we thank you, gentlemen, both for being with us bright and early this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. So Cliff, I have to tell you a couple of things here. We have a wonderful tie-in. Last week, Dr. Deere was on the program with me. I always love starting off when I'm filling in for Santita with Dr. Deere, because I think we could probably talk the entire week, you know, nonstop. But he's the best. He always has such wonderful news to share with us, and we have great conversation. He said, you need to have Cliff on. Because Cliff is the man. He's the executive director of the Lawndale Christian Legal Center. And we've talked about the centers many, many times, but not in the great detail that I want to. And Cliff, I also had your cohort Rodney on, Rodney Brown, earlier in the week. And we talked about the piece that you two penned for the Chicago Sun-Times last weekend, which was wonderful. So we're going to talk about that, too. But I want to start off talking about the Lawndale Christian Legal Center, what it is, and the incredible services that you provide to the Lawndale community.
Yeah, well, thanks, and thanks again for having me. I'm really excited to be here, and I feel the exact same way about Dr. Deere. I think he's a tremendous individual, and I really have enjoyed working with him both at the Legal Center and previously in the neighborhood before he was on our staff. So the Lawndale Christian Legal Center, our mission now is to really transform the criminal justice system in Cook County, and we believe that by doing what we do and taking it to scale in Cook County, that we can really substantively transform our communities and increase public safety. But exactly what we do is essentially we meet the legal and social needs of every young person that we represent that's under 25. Right now we're in North Lawndale, but we're about to expand into Austin, East Garfield Park, and Little Village. So we have an attorney-client privilege team that represents young people in juvenile court and adult court. And on that attorney-client privilege team, our social workers, case managers, outreach specialists, and then a network of wraparound supports that we have built in the neighborhood through a local collaboration to meet the, you know, housing, workforce development, mental health, mentoring needs of our young people. And ultimately, our model is designed to heal harm in the neighborhood and meet the social needs of our young people.
Absolutely. And Dr. Deere, you and I were talking last week, too, about all of this transformation starts with the community, and it starts with the children, with our youth. You know, they literally, they're the present and they're the future.
That's absolutely correct. And, you know, when I was a young boy, Whitney Houston made this song that I love to this day. The name of what was the greatest love of all.
Mm-hmm.
And it started with, I believe the children are the future. And I think that's such a true statement. One of the reasons we do the work that we do, because what we're doing in Lawndale, and one of my personal life missions is to make sure we change the world. And when we change the world, we have to change, we have to impact generational change. So the work that we're doing on the ground today actually has an impact that will last for those young people's children and their children's children. So we're changing the trajectories of their lives. And at the end of the day, Andrea, as you very well know, this is really about exposure. Mm-hmm. And I think we're able to do that in Lawndale at LCLC, is to expose our children, not only give them education around what not to do, but also expose them to services that they probably wouldn't have gotten, like case management, like counseling, like mental health services, like even going downtown, right? Some people haven't even been exposed to downtown. And I'll kind of wrap with this. You know, my dad would always tell me the story about a pool player who, you know, thought he was the best in the world and he would beat everybody in his neighborhood. But then when he left his neighborhood, he was losing. And dad said, well, he always wondered why the guy was losing. And he said, let me tell you something, son, and never forget this. He said to me, that guy was in his neighborhood. He thought he was an A-class pool player, but he had only been exposed to B-class pool players. When he left his neighborhood, he was exposed to A-class pool players, and he was only a B-class pool player. Mm-hmm. The long and short of the story is we have to expose our youth, and we have to expose them to the world and prepare them for the world. And I think, in part, that's what we're doing in the Lawndale community.
I echo that completely, and I know your website's such a wonderful tool. You're more than community based. You're part of it, and these numbers are wonderful. And this goes to your dad's story too, Dr. Deer. 70% of your staff members live in Lawndale. You know the people, you know the history, and you know the strengths, and that's the most important thing. And you're committed to helping the community thrive.
That's absolutely correct, and that. And I think another stat there is 51% of our board members are actually from the community as well. So this is, and this ties into the article that Cliff and Rodney did. This is community for the community, by the community. It takes community-led efforts in order to get the work done. Think about us as we go to the doctor. Nobody knows how we're feeling better than we're feeling. Even if our doctor tell us how we're feeling, we still only know, we're the only ones that really know how we're feeling. Same for the community. Oftentimes, we're the only ones that really know what's going on in the community when we stay here 24/7. And oftentimes, my belief is that we're the only ones that really know the resolve. We can fix our own stuff if given the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you referenced the article, and Cliff, I want to address this with you too. The article was in the Sun-Times last weekend, I believe Friday into Saturday, and then it just has gotten so many clicks. I've seen it on Chicago Beyond. I've seen it all over Facebook. It's a wonderful, wonderful article, and I was encouraging everyone to read it. And Cliff, you really, the first part and the first paragraph sets the tone for the entire op-ed piece. To reduce violence in the city, the answers lie in the same place the acts occur, within the community. And the sum and substance is that the dollars that are given to the community has to be given to the community leaders because they know where to put the money. They know where the resources are needed.
Yeah, that is correct. Yeah. And these are values that are near and dear to our heart. Although I'm not originally from North Lawndale, I moved into the community in 2009. I've lived here for 12 years and I'm raising my family. And, you know, Dr. Deer mentioned that our board is 51% from the community. Our founding board was 100% residents of the neighborhood, and our bylaws will require that our board be 51% from the community. And for the most part, it's been over 51%. But, yeah, I mean, you know, Rodney and I wrote that piece because, you know, the same song and dance year to year is always to place trust and resources and people outside the neighborhood that are quite frankly not really attached or connected to the issues that they're trying to solve. Mm-hmm. We've all seen time and time again, and it's exhausting. I mean, it is absolutely exhausting, but then the number of times and situations where either government, academia, large nonprofits downtown, you name it, research institutions, they gather in boardrooms with nobody. Mm-hmm. I mean, oftentimes it's literally with nobody from the neighborhood. Or they will, you know, they'll have a focus group in the community for 2 hours and claim they got community input, or they'll put one token member on their committee and they'll say it's community input. And we believe, like, we'll get input from those who aren't from here. That's who should be giving input. We're leading.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got to put the right people in the driver's seat. And it's not to say that other people can't provide resources, can't even lend expertise.
Mm-hmm.
There's experience beyond the neighborhood that we would be open and willing to learn from, but don't sit in the driver's seat. It's disrespectful. It's ineffective. It's not sustainable. And as you said, you know, people here know where the resources need to go. And, you know, programs have come and gone. Programs come and go. Contracts come and go. You know, every year it's named something different. But the people that the constant are us. We're here. We live here. We love our community. We're not going anywhere. And it's time to make investments in things that are long lasting, sustainable, and will actually impact the community in the ways that we know we can.
You know, and I think I've said this to Dr. Ritter too. If we could just eliminate all of the minutia right in the middle of everything, because the county board does such a great job, the city council does well most of the time too when they're allocating funds to the different neighborhoods. But it's what happens between the top and the bottom where the funds are going that everybody tries to get involved. There's too many cooks, if you will, at this point. Mm-hmm. So if we can just, how do we eliminate all of that legal minutia so these resources go directly to you, Cliff and Dr. Deer, and make sure that these funds go to these programs where they can be implemented, whether it's, like you said, Cliff, community centers or wellness centers or community gardens or whatever it might be?
Well, I can jump in on that, Dr. Deer. I'm sure you have some thoughts, too. I mean, I think it's kind of a two-sided equation. I think on the one side, it's the community coming together, and we're doing that in North Lawndale. Mm-hmm. The North Lawndale Community Coordinating Council is ensuring that we're working together, communicating, coordinating, and kind of, you know, just being on the up and up of what's happening in the neighborhood. I'm going to let Dr. Deer field that one.
Mm-hmm.
He's the co-founder of NLCCC.
Yep.
On the other side, though, and I'll speak to the folks on the other side who are, you know, funding these. And I think, you know, here's the thing, too. They really do want to put their money where there's going to be the greatest impact. But on this one, I think this goes to, you know, really, quite frankly, implicit bias. I think that there's just a inherent lack of trust in community-based, locally-led, smaller agencies as to what their, quote-unquote, capacity is. What can they handle? Are they going to be able to, you know, can we trust them with these resources? And that's the game that's got to stop. That's
yeah.
just got that. That conversation's got to end yesterday. It's offensive, quite frankly. And you know, there are local organizations in communities, not just in North Lawndale, in other neighborhoods as well. And the leaders and the staff and the boards are quite competent and quite capable of handling these funds and putting them to the best use.
Go ahead. Yes. Dr. Drew, you want to jump in on that? Too? Yeah.
I would add to that I think that we are, just like a lot of other communities around the city of Chicago and beyond, even around Cook County and the state of Illinois, in that all the community members want is true north. They want to survive. They want to thrive. They want to live. We communities like North Lawndale and Englewood, as you know, Andrea, when we look at this from a zip code standpoint, there's something that's called death by zip code.
Yeah.
Right? The research showed that the lifespan of the average person that lives in Streeterville is 90 years old, but just a few miles away in Englewood, it's 60.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Lawndale. And the numbers may be a little bit lower. And so that's where health equity comes in at, right? And that's where equity period comes in at, because you have situations where these community groups have been fighting for years. And as we talked about the other day, Andrea, there's just disinvestment
yes.
in multiple communities around our city and around our county that has to stop. And I won't go down the trail of ARPA dollars because it's easy to do so. But we need our communities to be invested in.
Yes.
And you have organizations like Rondale Christian Legal Center, and Rodney was on with you Monday talking about NLCCC and New Covenant. NLCCC has pulled together 30 organizations and over 300 people in the community, all under one drumbeat.
Right.
And that is for us, by us.
Yes. And it's multiple neighborhoods, too, as we talked about, Dr. Deere. It's not just Lawndale. It is Englewood and Chatham and the surrounding communities, too. So this is, when you say community, I probably should be saying communities, because you're helping all the surrounding communities. And the way you're doing it is just, it's so admirable, and it's just really the right way to do it, because, and I want you both to speak to this, too, your Lawndale Christian Legal Center. Also, we're talking about you providing legal and social services to Chicago's communities, but the way you go about doing it and the way it's structured, it's not just criminal legal defense, but it's about restorative justice and by a holistic approach, too.
Yes, that is
correct. And I'll stab at this at this cliff.
Yeah,
It is a holistic model, but it's a model that the community needs, right? We are a holistic being. Right, I oftentimes talk about the trichotomic being, which is mind, body, and spirit. So all of those parts of yourself have to be fed. And I think Lawndale Christian Legal Center does an excellent job of doing that and wrapping services around our youth who did not have the services.
Mm-hmm.
And to the point of sometimes actually being that person that youth can talk to, because oftentimes they don't have anybody to talk to. They don't have anybody to call family to. Sometimes we have to be that family. And so I'll punt it to Cliff and ask him to dive a little bit deeper into our holistic model.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Cliff.
Yeah, I mean, I think you kind of hit it on the head. You know, at the end of the day, what our criminal justice system is just not equipped to handle or understand is that they're a public service that is serving people. At the end of the day, it's people, not cases. It's not this factory, this factory style justice, which is no justice at all. But that there's actually, you know, human beings involved, and that those human beings, of course, come into their system with background and social situations that oftentimes, you know, make complete sense as to what's going on in their life. I mean, I would say almost every time. And so, you know, when you look at things from a community perspective, you're looking at families, you're looking at children, you're looking at people with needs, you're much more compassionate. Of course, you have cultural competence, you have community competence. These are your neighbors. These are your people, and you don't have the disdain that so many people that are mostly lawyers and law enforcement, not from the neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
That look upon our children and their families like they're less than and they're not worthy. And then when you have that built in to your psyche, then the answers, of course, always lie in more police, more courts, and more jails. And we're just vehemently opposed to all of that. I think we're clearly over-policed in Black and Latino communities. You know, we're clearly over-prosecuted, and we're clearly feeding way too many prisons. And this is the pipeline that leads to mass incarceration. So when you look at the numbers, let's just end with this. You know, you're looking at $300 billion annually across the country being spent literally on just police, prosecution, and jails.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at unemployment, healthcare costs, some of the, you know, collateral damage, there's studies that show it's $1.2 trillion annually. But whatever the number, $300 billion to $1.2 trillion. Locally, we're spending about $1.7 billion with a B on just policing.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And we know that the arrest rates in Chicago are upwards of 75 to 80% Black.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next biggest chunk are Latino. So you're talking $1.7 billion. You're not just talking about dividing that equally across all residents of Chicago. You're actually talking about 30% of the people, 35, I think, is roughly the African-American population in the city of Chicago, and you're spending $1.7 billion, most of that going towards policing Black communities and Latino communities. And then that's just policing. We're not, you know, the state's attorney's budget is $135 million. The public defender's budget is $80 million. The judiciary budget, the Cook County jail, the Cook County probation. You add up these numbers.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if we had half of that, a quarter of that money in our neighborhood to actually meet the social needs, to do things that bring community together, to heal, restore, repair relationships, heal the harm, bring resources needed to repair the situation that was created, but also then address the underlying root causes of why this young person's out on the street either selling or hustling or doing what they're doing? I mean, we could do magic with mm-hmm. a quarter of the money that we're currently pouring into a system that is doing harm and damage to our community.
At its core, the foundation of the NLCCC is based on the human aspect, what everyone in any community needs. And I want to give you guys a quick opportunity to wrap here because I know we're up against the clock. But please, lclc.net is the Lawndale Christian Legal Center. That's your website. And again, residents want what everybody wants. Affordable health care, a gym, improved housing. You know, you surveyed the residents, and this is exactly what they need. So I would highly encourage everybody listening to please go to this wonderful website, talk to these wonderful gentlemen, Cliff Nellis, the executive director, and our friend Cook County Commissioner Dennis Deere, both with the Longdale Christian Legal Center, the NLCCC, as we've been calling it. I can't thank you both enough for your time, and the points that you make should resonate with everybody. So I thank you for your time. Any final thoughts from either of you at this point?
I would add that thank you again, Andrea, for allowing us to take a little bit of time to talk about our work. You know, I know you rock.
You're the best, Dr. Deere.
Love to be on the phone with you and love to talk to you. And thanks for us to get these issues out. We know that there are many underserved communities out there that need the help, and we're here to help you as we help ourselves. It's all about us banding together, and I'll toss it to Cliff.
Go ahead, Cliff. You have a few seconds here.
Sure, Andrew. I'll just say thank you as well, and thank you for pushing the op-ed. I mean, I really think that our communities need to come together. The power is ours, and it's ours to give up. So as long as we stick together, we stay together, then you know we can shift this and make sure the resources go where they need to be.
Cliff, you have a future career in writing. I always tell Dr. Deere he is a future as a TV star or a radio star, but your future is absolutely in writing. I thank you both. I love talking to you, and we will keep pushing your website, lclc.net, the Lawndale Christian Legal Center. Cliff, Dr. Deere, thank you both so much for being with us, and come back again very soon.
Well, thank you. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you both. It's Andrea Darlis in for Santita Jackson. We'll have much more after this on Chicago's Progressive Talk, WCPT.
We can change the world, change the world, change the world.
Oh, yes, we can
change the world, we can change the world, change the world.
This is the Santita Jackson Show.
Back in studio with me today is my good friend Jerry Riles. You know, Jerry, I love talking to you because, again, I told Dr. Deere this too. You're someone I could just talk to forever. And yesterday, our time went so fast.
Yeah.
We were going to talk about 10 different things, and we talked about the Olympics, which was good, but by the time we blinked, the half hour was over.
Right,
so
exactly.
Now we have more to talk about with Milwaukee.
So, Andrea, the slogan, the logo that we have, it's the Rewind Sports 60. We do it every Sunday right here at WCPT 820 AM, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m., okay?
Yep.
We call it the fastest hour in sports conversation.
Right.
It's the fastest hour in sports conversation because there's so much to get to, but you only have little time. And so you got to roll, you got to move, you got to go.
Got to get it in. Got to talk about it all.
Yeah.
Which we will do today. We'll talk Cubs because I saw something very, very distressing about Chris Bryant.
Uh-oh.
I think the title of the story was Chris Bryant is all but gone,
mm-hmm.
which we have to talk about that. We have to talk about the White Sox because I really feel, and I'm not just saying this because our producer Paul is the biggest White Sox fan on the planet, I really think they have a chance to absolutely, well, for sure make the playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
But even maybe win it all this year. So we'll talk about that. But I know we should talk about Milwaukee first.
Yeah.
First title in almost 50 years.
50 years for sure.
50 years. Oh, it is 50, right. 1971.
Yeah, it is 50 years. And congratulations to them.
Yay.
I mean, seriously.
Our neighbors to the north.
Yeah,
I mean, you've been up there a lot.
Of course. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because Giannis, congratulations to him.
Yeah.
This kid spent 7-8 years drafted by the Milwaukee Bucks.
Mm-hmm.
And He's the Greek freak because of what he does in the paint.
Yeah.
What he does around the rim. He's a 7-footer. This guy is a freak. I mean, the style of play that he displays, it's a freakish for a 7-footer to be able to do the things that he's able to do.
Yes.
But having said that, the knack against him was that he didn't have a complete game.
Yeah.
An overall game. He can play inside the paint area. He can do the freakish things that he would do, slamming, you know, his athletic ability inside. But around the league and amongst his peers was that he wasn't complete because he didn't have a perimeter game, meaning shooting from the three-point stripe or behind the three-point stripe. And you know how the game has evolved, Andrea, that, you know, it's that's what players do now. We see Steph Curry, how he has elevated it to the highest level, shooting from beyond the arc. So a lot of, and 7-footers, Kevin Durant, he's one of those guys who can extend and shoot from beyond the 3-point range. Mm-hmm. And so Giannis wasn't accurate at doing that. And he got knocked for that, saying he'll never win an NBA championship because he wasn't that complete player. He couldn't extend the defense out and keep them honest and make them, you know, come after him. And to his credit, he did work on it.
Mm-hmm.
The past couple seasons, he did work on it. Specifically, being in a bubble last year.
It was a very difficult year.
Yeah, so he had spent a great portion of his summer up in Milwaukee shooting, you know, these 3-pointers. And, I mean, it's just not his knack. He was able to improve slightly his shooting percentage from beyond, you know, the 3-point arc, but that wasn't his game. And every time he got away from that, opponents would take advantage of it because he could not complete. He could not, you know, drain the threes, and opponents would get the long rebound, get the transition basketball going, and they would convert on the other end. During these playoffs, he was trying to do that as well, trying to be the complete player, trying to be the facilitator and get his teammates involved and trying to accommodate his critics and peers that said that you can't do it. And that hurt the Milwaukee Bucks. It hurt them.
Yeah.
And so I think people got in his ear. I think those respective peers around him said, hey, man, get back to your game.
Mm-hmm. Back to the core.
You are a dominant player. No one can stop you. Use your strength
right
to your advantage.
50 points, 14 rebounds, 5 blocks, nothing else to add. MVP, MVP, MVP. The Greek freak is hooping. I mean, that was from LeBron James.
Yeah.
This is all from Twitter from last night.
The other thing we don't do here is mention that guy's name. His name is not permitted on the Rewind Sports 60.
I know.
All right,
sorry. Wait, let's literally rewind.
Yeah,
strike
go.
That from the
there
record.
You go. Yeah, no, I mean.
But this guy, oh my God. And I'm all about the backstories, too. I mean,
right.
And not just because, you know, he's Greek or from Greece, but his backstory is amazing, too. Just coming from, you know, being an orphan and just how he rose up through, you know, just the structure and the game and crafted his abilities.
Right.
And it's exactly what he did, Jerry. Like you said, he's the premier athlete.
Yeah.
Just to watch him is insane.
And, you know, it's a credit to his upbringing. Because it was a character builder for him.
Yeah.
And in this day and age, Andrea, you know that a lot of athletes fold under pressure and they go with the status quo, so to speak, or, you know, they go with the popular vote, i.e., the guy, you know, LeBron James.
Yeah,
get it done in Cleveland, so he runs to Miami under Dwayne Wade. He gets the championship there. Then he goes to the storybook Los Angeles Lakers to continue to elevate his legacy. This kid, Giannis, said, hey, you know what? The Milwaukee Bucks drafted me.
Yeah.
I'm going to stay the course and stick to the core.
Right.
And I'm going to bring this community, this city,
A championship. Yeah, and he did.
And you know what? People respect that. They respect. That's why Michael Jordan is the king of kings, as far as, because especially in towns like Chicago and Milwaukee, people respect the hardworking blue collar style person.
Agreed.
Attitude.
Yep.
They know that if you roll your sleeves up and you put their town, that city, on your back and say, hey, you know what? We're climbing this mountain together.
Yeah.
And you accomplish it, you reach the mountaintop and you win, That says volumes.
Yeah.
It seems volume. And so it's a credit to Giannis for his determination to resign with the Milwaukee Bucks, to believe in the team itself, to believe in himself, and put the hard work in.
Yeah.
And it's a character builder based on his upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
Humbling, hardworking, and understanding there is a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. So congratulations to the Milwaukee Bucks and Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Congratulations to them. Just the third team in finals history to win four straight after trailing 2-0.
Yeah. And you know
it was hard fought. It was wonderful.
It was an exciting NBA finals. And what was refreshing for me is the fact that you had two players respectively on their teams and two teams who weren't the premier storybook, you know, franchise teams that, you know, we're accustomed to seeing. Again, the Lakers.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You got a chance to see. And of course, before the season got underway, it was the Lakers and Brooklyn who were projected to play in the NBA Finals.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, KD and Kyrie Irving and what was going on and what's developing in Brooklyn compared to what LeBron James and Anthony Davis were putting together in Los Angeles. And that's what everyone was expecting to see. But to see Chris Paul and the Phoenix Suns against Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Milwaukee Bucks, it was refreshing to see some new personalities.
It was.
Some
it really
new
was.
Faces. Here. Some just a new vibe. And more as important, some mid-sized market teams.
Yeah, yeah.
Not the big name teams. Some
right.
mid-sized market teams. So
yeah.
It was really, really good from a fan's perspective to see two guys going at it to try to win an NBA title for the first time in their careers. And unfortunately, someone has to lose.
Mm-hmm.
Someone has to lose. And Chris Paul, you know, unfortunately, his team had to fall. Devin Booker, they didn't get it done, obviously. Monty Williams, God bless him.
Yeah.
He's been through a hell and back personal, you know, experiences in his life. But that's a great human being, a great individual. But unfortunately, they came up a tad bit too short. And, you know, who knows if they'll be able to get back next year. But it was just great to see and watch and cover and follow, you know, two teams battling for the top spot. Who aren't normally there.
Right. I know it's early, too, but hopefully they'll have some sort of ticker tape parade or they'll have some sort of... I know Milwaukee's going to have a big celebration.
Let me tell you something. They make us... You know, we're the second city, right? Chicago's
well,
the second
we are
city.
We're called the second city. We're I always the, say we're the first city, but yeah, we are
not today.
Technically the second
not
city.
Not today.
You can't even say Milwaukee the first city today.
Let me tell you something. Let me tell you something.
Yeah, tell me.
Look at when the playoffs started, they had maybe like 10,000 fans outside of the arena in Deer District.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is Deer District? Because I've gone up there many of times and
yeah,
I knew nothing about the Deer District, right?
Right.
And they're like Deer District. As the playoffs continue to mount and Milwaukee continue to get this drive, the attendance outside continued to escalate. The prior to last night's game, they were average 20 to 25,000 fans. I'm like, this is outside, right?
Outside.
Last night's game 6 in Milwaukee, 65,000 fans to watch on Jumbotrons, Jumbo Strings outside.
I know.
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
They showed Chicago up not only by winning the NBA championship inside, but dominating their support and loyalty for their team outside with 65,000 unmasked fans screaming for their team. That's why we're the second city today, in my opinion.
All right. I'll give it to you for another hour and a half. How's that? Or at least through the end of the day.
No, I mean,
at least through their celebration.
Andre, you got to tip your hat to
you
them.
You do.
Because
you know, I'll give you a teeny little piece of trivia before I ask you about Chris Bryant. Not that this is even trivia or exciting to anybody but me. But I actually saw the Bulls, the year the Bulls won 70 games, right? It was their 72 games.
Yeah.
I saw that game in Milwaukee. That was one of the... I think it was the only game I ever saw in person where the Bucks play.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
So that was the old place.
That was the old place, yeah.
Yeah.
The old stadium.
Yeah. Here's the one thing about... well, we have so many memories about the Bulls and that championship run. And I guess the Last Dance is being played on ESPN Plus for those people who haven't seen it, which is, I can't imagine.
If you haven't seen it, stop right now, wait till the end of the show, and then go watch it. Well, binge it. Yeah. It's six episodes, right?
Yeah, you got to really.
It's awesome.
It's exciting. It's intriguing, and it shows a different side of the greatest player to ever lace him up.
But
I mean, for any experience that you've had during that time to watch the Bulls, you know, when the championship set the records or whatever the case may be, it's a once in a lifetime experience. And you know, even if you're in the building or were in the building during that time, I mean, it's a memory that will stay with you forever.
Absolutely. Goosebumps just talking about it. All right. So congratulations to Milwaukee. I want to move on to baseball because I have a very sad story, and I'm very disheartened because Chris Bryant has just been my absolute favorite player for many years now with the Cubs. And ESPN did a report overnight. He says Chris Bryant is as good as gone.
Yeah.
Please tell me that's not true.
No, well, if you recall, I think you and I talked maybe about a year ago about Chris Bryant.
We did.
And it was speculation there that the Cubs were looking to, you know, try to quietly move him.
Are they doing this for salary reasons, or are they doing this to try to get more for more bang for the buck, if
so
you will?
That's a great question. Obviously, that's why you asked it. And this is no inside information. But just being around the team and covering the team and just following them and knowing some of the characters involved, it's a business decision for sure from the Cubs' perspective.
Yeah.
Their time has come more or less. The core players that they had to win the World Series they're certainly on the downslide.
Yeah.
From Javi Baez to Wilson
Rizzo.
Contreras to Rizzo to Brian. Still, and I don't know what Paul thinks about this, even though he's a Sox fan, but I still can't understand.
Oh, yeah, we're getting Paul in on this, too.
I still can't understand why they brought Jake Arrieta back. I mean, he has nothing.
I agree with you. You
nothing.
Said that from the start, they're bringing him back, and I agree with you.
It's ridiculous, but as far as this move to, you know, to dismantle this team. obviously, it's a money factor, but I also believe that it's Jed Hoyer's opportunity to put his fingerprint team, transitioning from Theo Epstein.
Right.
This was Theo Epstein's creation as far as his vision to bring a World Series title to the North Side, to the Cubs. He accomplished that. Unfortunately, he fell short. They had the blueprint as far as what the 90 Atlanta Braves had as far as winning division titles for 10 straight, for a decade, but also adding on and winning World Series titles.
Yeah.
Well, they got halfway there. They won some division titles, but of course they won the World Series. But that was Theo Epstein's vision, and he accomplished that. So he goes off and moves on to another venture, another chapter in his life. Jed Hoyer is like, okay, I'm chomping at the bit. I'm ready to get my stamp of approval on this. These aren't my guys. The minor leagues have been depleted. I've got to begin to build my foundation, get the guys that I believe will bring us back to respectability and World Series titles. So these other guys don't have a future currently with this team because Jed Hoyer is like, hey, it's nice and we love you.
Right.
You did a great
job.
We got the World Series.
Yeah.
See you later. I'll make some move. And we'll bring some guys in, i.e. the Jock Peterson move a couple weeks ago to send him to Atlanta in exchange for a first baseman minor leaguer. Mm-hmm. So that was the first step, in my opinion, from a business perspective, that he's saying, hey, you know what? I'm going to start to build my foundation with the guys I believe young enough to learn the culture as far as what Cub Nation means and start to build from there. And hopefully get back to a World Series title. But I believe that it's Jed Hoyer saying, this is my team now. There's a new sheriff in town.
Yeah.
And this is how I'm going to run things.
So you think this is the first of several moves, which could include dumping Rizzo, Contreras, probably Rizzo and Baez would be...
yes,
the next logical choice. Oh God, and I'm saying this and I'm cringing.
I know. He didn't in spring training, they couldn't hammer out a deal with Rizzo. They didn't hammer out a deal with Rizzo. Yeah. And once the media talked to Anthony and said, hey, you know, what are you thinking your future as far as playing with the Cubs and the contract? He goes, hey, you know what? We got nothing done. I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Right.
That was, in my opinion, the writing on the wall.
Yeah.
And Jed, you know, he has to spin it the way he has to spin it.
Right.
But
it makes sense, and I'm glad you explained it that way, because that does make sense. That is the right thing to do. He wants to create his legacy, not continue on with Theo's legacy. Theo already has a legacy here in Chicago. We brought the World Series to the North Side, and now, obviously, Jed Hoyer wants to do the same thing, but with his team, with his own
people.
But I think
the problem is, especially in a market like this, I think the problem in trying to do that is you set yourself way back, and we've learned that lesson. We talked about the last dance with the Bulls.
Yeah.
And may he rest in peace, but Jerry Krause felt the same way, that he could break up the dynasty.
Oh, yeah.
And remember his, you know, it'll haunt him for, you know, eternity.
Forever.
That, you know, players don't win championships, organizations do. You can't just dismantle. You can't do it. I mean, you can do it, but there's no guarantee that you're going to rebuild it and have success.
Right.
Right?
Right.
The White Sox, and we'll get a chance to talk about them.
Yeah, let's segue into the White Sox, because I'm too sad now talking about the Cubs. So.
No, we'll talk about
the better team right now.
Yeah.
But, Paul going, yeah, White Sox, let's do it.
Rick Hahn.
Yeah, yeah.
Tony La Russa, they caught a lot of flack. Rick Hahn was not in support of bringing Tony La Russa in as the skipper. But, of course, the chairman, Mr. Reinsdorf, said, that's my guy. This is my team. He's running this ship.
Right.
Right. But Tony La Russa recently, Paul Sullivan had a great article in the Chicago Tribune about a week or so ago. But Tony La Russa, and he made comments on air as well. He said that, you know what? We've got a great foundation here. We have depth. The Sox are 20 games over 500, 8.5 games in the division over the Cleveland Indians. And Tony La Russa said this past week, he said, the reason we are playing so well is the fact that we have team depth.
Yes.
We don't just have the surface of the starting players or the superstar players. We've got team depth. And they have a 40-man roster.
Yes.
So if one guy, and we've seen it, one guy falls off, they just insert another guy.
Yeah.
And that's what a winning culture looks like in general. So for Jed Hoyer to dismantle everything, and I understand it, because they did it before back in, 14, 15, mm-hmm. right? It's a hell of a lot to ask your fan base to sit back again and watch this happen.
Right.
So that's why I think, you know, hopefully he's doing it the right way, that meaning Jed Hoyer, by transitioning.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you just get rid of all these guys and try to bring in some younger players and try to keep that, you know, that Cub mystique there to lull fans to sleep again and say, we're going to win this World Series title in about a couple years or so, you're almost fooling yourself, I think. But we were surprised what the Cubs were able to do when they did it. On the South side, this is something that Rick Hahn took from Theo Epstein by observing and said, you know what? We are going to be that team
mm-hmm.
that's going to win multiple World Series titles.
Yeah.
And I'm going to make sure that that happens, because I'm going to build up our minor league system to make sure that we have players that we can insert when we need to. And unfortunately, Andrea, it happened sooner than he expected with all the major injuries. And these young guys have stepped up and answered the call, i.e. Gavin Sheets, the right fielder who jacked out his three-run shot. First time walk-off homer in his baseball career.
How cool is that?
And he's not even an outfielder.
Right.
Not even an outfielder.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's so we're seeing this. And if you look at the White Sox, and again, Paul can attest to this, if you look at the White Sox roster, these guys, it's a minor league roster. Because of all the injuries that they've endured over the season.
Yeah.
It's a minor league roster with these players that they have on the team, yet they're 20 games over 500.
It's and eight, what are they, eight over Cleveland right now?
Yeah, eight and a half over Cleveland.
Okay.
So it's working for the White Sox.
Yeah.
And White Sox fans, they were complaining about Tony La Russa. They failed to realize, despite his age, this guy is a wealth of knowledge.
Yeah.
And he is locking in with his players in the clubhouse, and it's reflecting on the field.
Yeah.
So the White, fact,
yeah.
the White Sox fans, it's like the Wizard of Oz. They got to pull back the curtain and see the guy working the handles. You know, that's Tony La Russa.
It is.
That's Tony La Russa. And I think it's a year faster than what Sox fans and the organization expected. But they're ready.
Oh, I think so, too. I think Chicago's ready for
another. What do you think, Paul?
I expected this, though. I thought if you would have told me back in February that by July 21st the White Sox would be, you know, nearly 10 games above Cleveland or second place, I would be like, yeah, exactly. I just wouldn't have thought that they would do that without Luis Robert or Eloy Jimenez, who they're also going to get back soon. I want to say Robert starts his rehab stint in Winston-Salem today.
Yeah, exactly.
And Jimenez has already hit a couple home runs at the couple of levels he's played. They should be back and ready relatively soon, and they might not make a move at the trade deadline and still improve just by getting those two guys back.
Mm-hmm. They don't have to make a move at the trade deadline. And people are saying, well, maybe do they need another pitcher? Do they need another arm? Because, I mean, the old saying, as we all know, is pitching and defense will win you championships, okay?
They don't need to sacrifice much if they do go and pursue somebody.
There's my opinion. I'm sitting behind a mic and not in the front office or in the dugout. But in my opinion, I don't think you touch this team.
Yeah.
And like you said, with the injuries that these players experienced earlier, and they're healthy now, Eloy said, hey, I'm 200%.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm 200%. That's scary.
I know. We only have about a minute left. I want to ask you guys mid-season predictions. You think the White Sox will go all the way?
Again, I think they're a year ahead of schedule, and they're exceeded the expectations.
You're cautiously optimistic. I see Jerry's wheel spinning.
I'm going to step out on a limb, and watched Maria Taylor and Jalen Rose on ESPN pregame NBA Finals, and they stepped out on a limb among 65,000 fans and said the Milwaukee Bucks will win Game 6 to win their first NBA title in 50 years. I will step out on a limb on Andrea Darlis' show, whether it's Santita Jackson's show, filling in Andrea Darlis on WCPT 820 AM, and say I believe the Chicago White Sox will win the World Series in 2021.
Oh,
I will
step out on a limb,
because I have the faith, I believe, and I'm tired of being the second city behind Milwaukee, no disrespect, but this is Chicago.
That's right.
They're grinders. They're blue-collar workers. They're hard-hitting MFers, and they're coming back. They got an attitude. They got a spark in them. They're going to win it.
There you go, Jerry. Very nice. Wow. We all second that. I love you. Thank you for coming in and for talking.
I'll do anything for you. I told you. I'll run through a wall.
You know, we're going to play some golf. We're going to play Waveland one of these days. And you played yesterday. You're playing today.
You're going to play. I'm going to be out there.
I love you. It's the great Jerry Riles. Your show again.
It's the Rewind Sports 60 every Sunday, 6 to 7 p.m. It's the fastest hour in sports conversation. Real sports, real talk, just playing real. And Paul Shivari, he is our baseball insider, our White Sox insider.
He's the best, and he's thrilled that you stepped out on that limb today, Jerry.
I'm hoping you're right.
You heard it right here on the Santita Jackson Show on July 21st at 6:58. Jerry, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. We'll talk to you again very soon. Give my best to T.J. Crawford.
Yeah, he's coming up next.
Tell him I said hello.
I sure will. T.J. Crawford coming up after the news. It's Andrea in for Santita. Chicago's Progressive Talk, WCPT.
We can change the world, change the world, change the world.
A city plan to bring an outdoor roller rink and a community plaza to a vacant West Side lot this summer has the lofty goal of reclaiming the area, bringing it right back to the community. I'm so excited to talk to the director of the Garfield Park Wellness Collaborative. T.J. Crawford is here. T.J., you have a big hello and a virtual hug from Jerry Riles.
Okay, thank you. Hello, good morning. Happy to be with you. And just for sake of clarification, it's the Garfield Park Right to Wellness Collaborative.
You got it. The Right to Wellness Collaborative. Tell us about this lofty plan and this amazing community plaza that's being discussed and talked about and is going to happen?
Well, the lofty plan, I think, is the plan that everyone should have, right? How do you create and sustain a healthy, wealthy, and well community where folks have the access to opportunities, to resources, to be able to enjoy themselves, to be able to take care of their families, to recreate, to create, and just live an overall good life, right? There are a couple mm-hmm. different elements that are important to maintaining healthy communities and having recreational facilities and that are safe and that are, I guess, available to communities and individuals and families is one of those. So we're just beginning a long process that we hope will help Garfield Park evolve into a place where its residents have a greater quality of life.
TJ, you have said, and I think this is absolutely wonderful, this will be a place that the community is going to co-program with the park district to fill the need for safe spaces for families and children.
Yep, definitely. So through this partnership, through the city's neighborhood activation, the park district, and the Garfield Park Rights and Wellness Collaborative, we've created a plaza advisory committee that also is composed of a steering committee. And we are working hand in hand with the park district to program everything that happens during operation hours, official operation hours, which are 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. every Tuesday through Saturday. So for open skate, for movies in the park, for, you know, exercise opportunities, for, you know, skating for toddlers and children, all that's being programmed. In addition to, we have the opportunity for probably between 7 and 9 o'clock and on Sundays and Mondays for the community to come through and be as creative as they want to. It's not just a skating rink. It's a multi-purpose plaza that can host everything from farmers markets to fashion shows to chess tournaments.
I think it's absolutely wonderful. This is all part of the mayor's neighborhood activation pilot program that invests in these neighborhoods. And it's wonderful.
Yeah, we, you know, the work of the Garfield Park Rights and Wellness Collaborative was already going on. We have four major initiatives. One is to do a quality of life plan, to create and implement a quality of life plan for Garfield Park with an emphasis on West Garfield Park. Two, to do a corridor plan for Madison and Pulaski. Three, to build a wellness center along the Madison corridor on the west side of the park. And four, to do an ongoing behavior change marketing campaign that informs and is informed by the community on how we can develop the habits that'll create healthy families. And obviously that starts with healthy individuals, healthy parents, and healthy children. So as we were doing the work and the mayor and the city of Chicago was looking to implement the neighborhood activation plan, we bumped heads as we were, you know, both doing outreach in the community and decided that we could partner. And the roller rink came out of 5 to 7 design charrettes where it was an idea that was posited by members of the community or several design sessions, and we're moving forward on it. And it's the first step of hopefully a number of different things that are part of the evolution of Garfield Park.
We're talking to TJ Crawford, the director of the Garfield Park Right to Wellness Collaborative. And TJ, what a cool idea. How did you come up with the idea for a roller rink?
Well, like I said, the idea of the roller rink came out of our design charrettes. One of our foundational principles, however, in the work that we're doing in Garfield Park as a collaborative is how do you center a community around the practice of authentic Black culture. We define culture as the expression of the values and principles that are most important to a particular people that lend to their long-term health and well-being. And we will reflect back on all of the different things that have been part of the cultural expression of the Black community in the United States. One of the things that people continue to speak of fondly through those design charrettes was roller skating and skating on Madison and what that meant, not just for them to be able to congregate with friends, but as adults, they recognize that the movement and just the balance and everything that comes along with skating was something that helped them in terms of maintaining their health, having fun, and just being able to move forward with something that allowed them to relieve stress and just enjoy themselves. So when that idea was brought numerous times to the design charrettes, we heard it, the city heard it, and then moved on a way to try to make it real. And so 4 to 5 months later, we have a rink in Community Plaza opening on Madison and Pulaski.
I think it's absolutely wonderful. While I think it's wonderful and admirable and great that we have, you know, the ice rink in Millennium Park and the events in the downtown area and the Gold Coast, that's wonderful. But I love the fact that more of these fun events, ice rinks and, you know, the ice rink in Wicker Park that they opened about 2 years ago, and now the roller rink that's going to be in Garfield Park. You know, these are activities that really are mainly for the kids. The adults have fun doing it too, but for the kids and for the youth in the communities, directly in their neighborhoods. And I think that speaks volumes, and that's what's very important, TJ.
Yeah, no doubt it is. The plaza, you know, again, as an expression of what's important to us, you know, shows folks that the city and that community residents and all stakeholders are being really intentional about the investment that we need to make and will continue to make in our community. A lot of the things that we see happening are because of disinvestment. It's because of gaps that are created. There are voids where nothing is happening, but folks are not just going to sit back and do nothing. They're going to figure out ways that they can survive. And when you don't have access to the resources and opportunities that would serve you best, you're going to figure out something because you have to be able to make it. So we hope and intend for this plaza, like I said, to just be one small step towards a continual investment where the community reclaims the space, right? If you don't create space, or if you create a gap rather, or a vacuum, something's going to fill it. In this instance, we want to fill that vacuum with love. We want to fill it with opportunity. We want to fill it with fun and resources that will help us to grow and to maintain as a collective.
Yeah, and another point too, children already frequent the area because it's the main shopping district for the neighborhood. But every element of the plaza, and you touched on this a little bit, I want to focus on this a little more, TJ, every element of the plaza is designed with public safety in mind.
Yeah, not only is it a commercial district, one block away you have Legal Library. Right across the street from that you have Melody School. So children and families consistently walk up and down these blocks in these neighborhoods, even in the midst of the current conditions, which, you know, are far from the best. So as we continue to care about their safety, right, it is imperative that we make sure that the corridor is a place where they can walk up and down safely and feel like this is a place that they want to be. And so inside the plaza, for sure, we have the rink, we have a stage, we have sitting areas, we have a space for children and families to play. We hope that in this small space, we can model, just as you would do at the library, just as you would do at the school, what it looks like to, one, practice Black culture in safe and peaceful and inviting environments. And we expect that the energy that is generated through the plaza and its connectedness to those other institutions, of course, Garfield Park is two blocks away. We hope that that energy will be able to resonate and grow and expand and vibrate, right? So where it becomes infectious and it affects everyone in the nearby community.
TJ, earlier in the program, I talked to Cliff Nellis and earlier in the week, Rodney Brown. And Cliff and Rodney wrote a wonderful op-ed for the Sun-Times talking about plans like this, resources and money being directed, going directly to the community, being directed to the residents and the community leaders. And I think this project also tackles the historical disinvestment that has just become all too commonplace sometimes in our South and West neighborhoods.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's important, though, that, you know, this project by itself is not going to turn around the community, mm-hmm. right? It's like a plant. You put a seed there, you have to water it, you have to maintain it, you have to make sure that the environment is what is necessary for it to grow, right? So we have the plaza that's opening, and we hope to be able to demonstrate not only how you use it for a recreational space, but also how it could be a fun commercial space that brings opportunity for community residents in a number of ways. So what else is needed, right? We talked about the development of the quality of life plan, the Madison-Pulaski corridor plan, the wellness center. You know, folks need resources to be able to own the properties in which they live in. We have to be able to change the mindset, kind of, you know, change the images and messages that are consistently, the stories really that are told about who this community is. We have to attack this thing on all fronts. Racism is a real thing. It's been institutionalized and weaponized. So when we want to change that, it's going to take a long time, but, you know, if you're committed, and you believe in what you're talking about, and we understand scientifically these are the things that will bring about not just healthy communities but healthy people, then we have to stay at it in a very intentional, consistent way. And that's what we intend to do here in Garfield Park, and hopefully link with others across the city and other neighborhoods and wherever else folks share the mindset and value set of creating healthy, wealthy, and more well communities.
Yeah, and with that link, TJ, this added presence too, I think will help businesses and of course, boost the local economy and help these surrounding businesses.
No doubt. I mean, we can go down the whole line of what this dude does to the what they call it, the built environment, right? Mm-hmm. And people who walk up and down the neighborhood. I think, you know, for us, for a lot of the businesses along the Madison and Pulaski corridor, I don't know. I want to be really careful because I don't want to necessarily point my finger, but a lot of them have not done what they could as business owners to invest and help to maintain a safe neighborhood as well, mm-hmm. right? So we, even in managing the space, have to model to them what it means to be invested, right, operators of businesses, and show how to impact this particular community. And I know they know how to do that. It just has not been priority for Garfield Park, which is a 97% black community. It has not been priority to these business owners. And, you know, we can get into why that is, right? And it's an interesting thing. Mm-hmm. I might take us down a rabbit hole that can go for another 30, 45 minutes. But the
we
way
got
that
it. We got the time, TJ. It's all yours.
Well, I don't have another 30 to 45 minutes because I got to go lead a meditation session because I'm also a clinical social worker at the Mind for Redemption Project.
Uh-huh.
So I got that work going on.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I said, institutional racism is real, right? And for a community, it's really important for people to feel ownership and have the ability to control their own environment, right? That's a theory that we all know about, is self-empowerment, right?
Yeah.
And then self-efficacy is your belief in your ability to do that. So how do you believe and then match that with the resources to then turn that into a reality? And we know that historically, when black folks have tried to be their authentic selves, there has been something, right? And some things, multiple things, that comes up and says, Nal, if you don't operate within this box in which we believe you should operate in, then we're going to fight against what it is that you are creating. You know, when you go to get a loan, when you go to try to access property, when you matriculate through an educational process, when you start telling your own stories, at every turn, unfortunately, during our existence in this country, we've experienced that, right? And a lot of the, if not all of the violence that we see is a result of those violent acts that have historically attacked generations of black folks. And of course, it's not just black people. Everybody have experienced some form of prejudice or racism in their time. But for black folks in particular, this thing has been, you know, put on 1,000, right? So luckily, there's a remnant, right? And there are people who still find value in themselves, find value in others, and want to model the best of humanity and make these investments so that we could turn this thing around. And we know how to turn it around. The plaza is just one step, right? We got
right.
So much work to do, but it's one step in this work to be able to build communities that can sustain and thrive naturally, being their natural selves. And when black folks can be their natural selves, we become an aid to everyone else around us. And that's been, you know, shown throughout our time on this planet. And every group has its own unique contribution that it has to make to humanity. We, as black folks, continue to make ours. We hope to do so in an even greater way. But we have to first heal from the ills of racism, institutional violence. And when I say institutional violence, again, we talk about education, we talk about housing, we're talking about economics, right? We're talking about so many different things that have stymied or sought to stymie our growth. Yet we're resilient, we're still here, and we intend to set a better path for our children and their children and the children that are yet to be born.
And that's the emphasis, too. That's the focus, too, TJ. You know, the plaza, as we've talked about with the roller rink, it's going to host the farmers markets and the movie nights, but it's a place where young people are going to be given the opportunity to express themselves through art workshops and open mic nights. So the emphasis really, it all goes down to the children and the kids and the community.
It does, no doubt. But I want us to be really clear that you can't, children are not separated from their families, right? The individuals that have the greatest emphasis or the greatest impact on a child's development are the people that they see every day. And those people are in the houses that they live in. They're the people that they share, genetics with, right?
Right.
So when you start talking about working with children, you inherently have to work with the family. If you separate, if you work with children and leave the family out of it, then you're still going to stunt growth. Children are still going to go back to the same environment. Parents, grown, adult folks, they used to be children, and they have the responsibility of caring for the young people. So we have to wrap our arms around the entire family unit and make a safe space for the entire family unit to be able to recreate, to let off stress, to learn, have opportunity there to create for themselves and to grow. So while the emphasis is on the children, when you put emphasis on the children, if you have a family-first mindset, then that inherent means that you're also going to emphasize what's going on with the parent, what's mm-hmm. going on with the brother, the sister, the auntie, the uncle, the great-grandma, everybody that influences the children, because it's all of our responsibility to raise our children to be the best that they could possibly be. So that's why, for me, when you say to children, for sure, we're definitely creating a safe space for children.
Yep.
But we also are creating a safe space for family, and that's for every member of the family, because we want to see ourselves as a collective unit where we have shared values and principles that inherently will make sure that our children are protected and that they grow and can continue a cycle of protecting and providing for their children and on and on and on.
And feeling safe. Absolutely. TJ, where how what's the timeline now for the roller rink, the community? When are you hoping to have this up and ready and running?
The plaza will be open this Friday.
Excellent.
So we're getting everything in place. So phase one of construction is really probably done today. We have to go up there and check and see where we're at. But the plaza will be open this Friday. It'll be open through the end of September. Then it'll close for the season. And then phase two of construction will begin. So obviously we'll deal with whatever the winter brings in terms of the weather. But there are a number of different accoutrements that have to be added to the space so that by the time spring of 2022 comes, we'll open up and it should have everything that it needs, that it wants, and that it can reflect the best of the community. And hopefully also during this time, the community will continue not just organized around the plaza, but organized itself to be able to address all of the other needs, where we can have a more cohesive, collaborative means of addressing those issues and working together to be able to be our own solution.
Well, you have to be so proud. It opens, the plaza opens tomorrow. Everything should be slated for completion by summer of 2022 when it comes to the roller rink. You got to be so proud that this was such a wonderful vision and it's now happening. You know, you can take that walk through tomorrow and just breathe a sigh of relief and smile big because you've done a really nice job, you and everybody within the Garfield Park Ride to Wellness Collaborative.
Yeah, we're excited about it. So not tomorrow, but Friday.
Friday, yeah,
is when it officially opens. We're definitely excited. It's a good benchmark for the work that we are doing and that we will continue to do. It's a great model of how community residents can work in cooperation with the city, with the mayor's office, and with the various departments that fall under the mayor's purview. And it's a great example of when the community is heard, when we believe, right? Because this is also part of a process. Like, you can talk about you can talk about change, you can talk about investment forever, but until you see it in a way that resonates with you, it's hard to believe that it can happen. But once you do believe, right, the Bible talks about faith as a mustard seed. Once you do believe, then that thing can grow to heights and provide in ways that we can't even imagine. So we expect this to be one more seed that we are going to be intentional about watering, that we're going to be intentional about protecting, intentional about creating an environment where it can grow, and we expect us all to benefit from it. It's not going to be without challenge, right? And everything is not super smooth. People have different opinions about what should come first, what should come second, where this should go. We got to work through all of those processes. This is an example that we can continue to point to of how we work together. And when you just get going and you're intentional about where you're going, all the fruits that come from that labor.
Absolutely. TJ, I thank you so much for your time. This is just an amazing project. It's happening. And thank you for all your time. Oh, also a shout out to Alderman Irvin, I know, who worked very closely with the Garfield Park Right to Wellness Collaborative on this this project as well as other city agencies, but to really bring the idea to life.
Yeah, Alderman, all of the agencies that are part of the collaborative. If you guys are interested in learning more about the Right to Wellness Collaborative, you can go to righttowellness.com, R-I-T-E-T-O, wellness.com. Learn more about the organizations and stakeholders that are part of the collaborative. We're continuously growing, so if you're in Garfield Park, we invite you to, you know, get in contact with us to join a collaborative. If you're not in Garfield Park, we look forward to creating bridges that can allow us to work together where we link communities and grow as a collective.
TJ, thank you so much. We'll see you out there Friday, and best of luck on the rest of the project.
Oh, thank you, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you so much. That's TJ Crawford. He's the director of the Garfield Park Right to Wellness Collaborative. The plaza, as he said, will open on Friday. There'll be a farmer's market. There's all kinds of wonderful activities right by the downtown business community in Garfield Park. It's 4008 West Madison Street. The roller rink, the plaza, the recreational facility, it's being built on that lot at Madison and Pulaski in the main commercial corridor of West Garfield Park. Get on out there and check it out. This is an amazing, wonderful project. As I said, in addition to the roller rink, TJ said the plaza is going to host activities and programs for young people. There's going to be chess and pickleball, dance and fitness classes, volleyball, and they're going to have really cool events like movie nights, art workshops, and open mic nights for the kids. All right, thanks to TJ. After the break, we are going to talk to Jen Walling. She's the executive director of the Illinois Environmental Council. It's Andrea Darlis in for Santita Jackson on the Santita Jackson Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, WCPT.
From a place of pain, war, and hate to a place of love, it's not too late. Gotta save the children, we can't wait. Let's change the world. I am breathing for all of the people.
We can change the world, change the world, change the world.
Oh, yes, we can.
We can change the world, we can change the world.
This is the Santita Jackson Show.
At this year's Chicago Auto Show, one of the show-stopping entries was an electric vehicle, Ford's F-150 Lightning. The auto show is in the books. It was a shortened version, but that truck and other electric cars that were on display have electric vehicle advocates eager to accelerate the shift from gas to electric. I thought this is the perfect time to talk to my friend Jen Walling, the executive director of the Illinois Environmental Council. Hi, Jen.
And good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing well.
I thought this would be the perfect segue and the perfect way to start our conversation about, in Illinois, we've talked so many times about clean energy and the environment. Gas-powered vehicles produce more than 11,000 pounds of carbon dioxide equivalent emissions every year. Electric vehicles produce about 2,300 pounds of carbon dioxide equivalent emissions. So you must have been thrilled with some of the debut of these new cars at this year's auto show in Chicago.
Absolutely. There are so many manufacturers creating several models of electric vehicles, and it is pretty exciting to see one of the kind of, unfortunately, most popular models in America becoming an electric vehicle. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people don't realize this, but transportation emissions are now the largest source of carbon emissions at about a third of the emissions globally. So it's really important that we reduce carbon from that sector.
And also, too, I saw you quoted in a story, or you were on Chicago Tonight or on WTTW a few weeks back, and talking about public transportation and how that can make an impact more quickly as local governments can buy fleets of buses as opposed to single cars or single vehicles.
Absolutely. And, you know, I know this is really exciting to talk about the residential electric vehicles and passenger vehicles, but both public transit and medium and heavy duty trucks have the power to transform air in our worst communities, in our environmental justice communities, where we're already just dumping air pollution. And so with fleets, it's much easier, more quick to transition the entire fleet at one time because you buy the appropriate charging infrastructure and you can just transition that whole fleet over. And so CTA, pace, et cetera. CTA has 6 electric buses. They're running the Chicago Avenue line with electric buses and have plans for more. We've been very upset with PACE, who just put out a new report that they're going to buy a whole bunch of new natural gas buses, just not doing what other communities like Champaign, Bloomington, Normal, Quad Cities are doing in terms of investing in electric. So there are so many opportunities with public transit, and those opportunities, it might be a smaller section of the overall transportation emissions, but we'll get it done more quickly and we'll have a bigger impact in the lives of people in low-income communities.
Are these missed opportunities, is that a budget concern, Jen? Is that why some of these companies are opting, not to place blame on these companies, but is it that they're opting for this because of budgetary restrictions?
Well, I think there are some budgetary restrictions, but I know that folks, especially smarter than me, have looked at the overall cost. And while it might be more of an investment up front, it is something that saves agencies like PACE or CTA money over time. So I think partially it's just a mental shift, and they need to understand this is where we're going. We're going to zero emission vehicles. This is what consumers in the Chicagoland area want. And so we were really surprised to see how heavily PACE has a bunch of diesel buses now, and their newest report really looked at almost all of their new buses would have been compressed natural gas. And that's just unacceptable. We really need to see, we need to go beyond natural gas, beyond fracked gas, into real, true zero-emission vehicles.
How does Chicago rank overall? I mean, and if you had to give us a grade, when it comes to energy and the environment and trying to reduce some of these carbon emissions and, you know, clean up our carbon footprint?
Well, I think I'm going to give us like a C. We're not doing great.
That's what I would think. Yeah, kind of average. Yeah. With work still to do.
Yeah, absolutely. We are leading definitely in the area of innovation in terms of communities. I mean, when I talked about those electric buses, there's 2 huge manufacturers in Illinois, Rivian and Normal, and a new manufacturer, Alliance Electric, that's going to Will County. So we're like picking up in terms of innovation, but in terms of government leadership on these issues and getting things done, there's so much more that we could do.
You know, speaking of government, that's probably a perfect segue, because the last time you and I spoke, state lawmakers were on the verge of passing what many called the country's most aggressive climate bill. And that was the plan that would shut down all the coal plants in the state by 2035 and phase out natural gas by 2045. And I'm throwing these numbers out and we think, wow, that's so far away. It's really not.
No, it's not. And we got to get it done. I think that part, we're still at the part where we're discussing the closure of the coal plants, closure of natural gas. I think it's really hard for our partners in labor to get around these planned closures and that these jobs are going to be lost. A lot of coal jobs are going to be lost anyway. And so we need to head towards this a date towards which we close these facilities. So that's the part that we're still talking about. But I think there's a lot of optimism. I was just at a fundraiser last night, and a lot of folks were talking still that we're going to get it done quickly.
So lawmakers, they still have to go back, for their summer session, the fall veto session, of course, too. Where do we stand on these climate bills and whatnot? Are we kind of in limbo, in a limbo stage right now?
It's a definite limbo state.
Yeah.
We're still having discussions and talks and seeing where we can get the votes. We're going to need a supermajority in both chambers. But I think that there is a lot of pressure, the nuclear plants threatening to close. Solar is having an absolute crisis as of August 30th. The solar rollover funds, the solar money that would be available is just gone. And there are a lot of projects that will not happen if we don't pass anything by then. And the solar industry is really suffering. I just had a call with some folks from the solar industry that just are very nervous about what's going to happen. So there's work to do. And you know, the legislature needs to go back to pass congressional maps. They've got some work to do. So I hope we're going to be seeing everybody this summer.
Is there anything that could be done kind of at the federal level, you know, now with the Biden administration and then their renewed promises to focus on energy and the environment, clean energy and the environment? Will any of those resources trickle down to Illinois and or to Chicago?
Yeah, we've been really excited about the infrastructure discussions and the way that those discussions have funded clean energy, climate change issues. So, you know, that's a start, but we definitely need to work to a point, you know, under the Obama era, we had the Clean Power Plan that Trump quickly rolled back. That's going to have to be something that we consider in terms of carbon reductions for the entire United States. And so definitely the federal government will have an important role. But if we jump quickly on our state leadership, you know, it's just going to be a lot of benefit for us in terms of economic investment, in terms of jobs, in terms of tackling the climate crisis. So we got to get on this. We can't wait for the federal government.
Absolutely. And last time, too, we talked about jobs. I know that was a big concern, too. But the state could provide more than $700 million for the Exelon plants that are in Morris and Braidwood. And the Illinois Environmental Council said that the plan can also support workers at those plants without an unjustified bailout. So that's another positive.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in terms of the energy package we're discussing, you know, Exelon asked for $5 billion over 10 years. The package kind of looks more like $700 million over five with the possibility of reductions if they're actually doing well in the market. But other items, there's a ton of money that is in the bill that is for things like equity programs. So making sure that we are training people throughout Illinois at workforce hubs, particularly people of color, to get into jobs in the clean energy sector. Also making sure that there's really great transition plans for places where coal plants are going to close. And it's great because we already know these coal plants are going to close. If we don't pass this bill, it's really anti-worker because these plants close with 30 or 60 days notice. We need to protect these communities and protect the workers as these plants are closing. So there's a ton in the bill in terms of tackling job transition, racial equity, just job training in general that we definitely need to see.
I'm going to say this, pun intended, you have to be kind of breathing a huge sigh of relief, of clean air and fresh relief with Governor Pritzker's commitment. And of course, you know, President Biden, and I think we talked about this last time too, Jen, that President Biden, when he delivered his plan for the Illinois environment, for the environment, saying Illinois needs to join in. I think you would call it one of the best days when you heard that statement for climate action in more than a decade.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just so nice. Of course, I do a lot of lobbying at the state level, and the Browner administration was a very hard time. And heading over to Governor Pritzker, that signed the U.S. Climate Alliance within 10 days of him taking office. And then Biden bringing back the word climate change, talking about it, actually doing something about the climate crisis and the problems. I mean, you know, like the world is on fire again.
Right.
We need to actually look at what is happening in the world and take action on it. So it's really, elections matter. And it's really great to see leadership that is not just knows climate change exists, but is ready to take action on it.
Well, what else? What can we be doing? Just regular residents of Chicago, citizens of the state of Illinois, what can we be doing to help create a better carbon footprint for the state?
Well, I mean, even before the actions that we're taking, you know, we need to get this clean energy bill done. So folks making sure that, you know, the governor has been a really big ally, and we were uncertain at first, but he definitely has come out with public statements saying he's not going to support a bill that doesn't decarbonize the power sector, which is huge. So we need to be supporting him by contacting our lawmakers to say this is urgent and it needs to get done now is absolutely the best thing that anybody can do to reduce their carbon emissions, which you know, doesn't seem like turning off the lights or turning the heat down, but super important. So those are definitely some things that I recommend. And As we move forward, folks looking at their individual impacts, there's a lot of things you can do on energy efficiency. When we pass this bill, it's going to be a real good time to enter into a solar project or even right now, purchasing part of a community solar project as part of your energy, really great way to reduce your carbon emissions. There's so much information out there, but my aim is to make the sustainable choice the default choice, you know, so that when you go and have to make choices about energy, every choice that you're making is the low energy choice and the low carbon emissions choice, rather than right now, where the easy choice is going to be the high carbon emission choice.
Right. Absolutely. When you talk about the solar projects, is that easy to become a part of?
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of it, just Google community solar and a whole bunch of Illinois projects will pop up. They're trying to sell to folks right now, and there are a lot of sales pitches, so I do recommend that people look at it. Citizens Utility Board has a lot of information to make sure that you're getting the best deal that you can. But if you just, even if you just Google Illinois Solar at this point, a lot of those community solar projects are popping up. And those are where there is a utility scale, like large scale project somewhere else, and you can own part of it. And you actually get energy savings from it because that solar is cheaper than what you might be buying from ComEd. And it's not on your roof. It's somebody else's field or roof or that sort of thing, but you own it. And no matter where you move, you're going to be getting that solar energy as part of that project. So there are a number of projects out there that you can purchase. There'll be even more soon. But, you know, it's also something to look at in terms of if you're going to investing in solar energy as well. You know, they can go and look at your roof, just looking at Google Maps, and give you a good idea of whether your roof is a good choice for solar and what it might cost. Yeah. The Illinois Solar Energy Association is a group I work with a lot, and you just go to their website. They have a ton of contractors, and you can look up your zip code.
Yeah, and a lot of times, as you said just now, you can look up your zip code, you could look on Google Maps, and sometimes these companies will, you know, I get these the mailers, or you get the flyers on your door. It's a free phone call, and, you know, they could probably come out and just take a look and see if you're well-equipped for this. I mean, it's really doing your part, not only for yourself and your family and saving some money, but for the environment and keeping all of us, you know, in this together and safe.
Yes, yeah. I think there are a lot of energy choices consumers have now. And I do know, you know, I'm sure people are getting a lot of energy mailers and
sort
of those people that knock doors or on the streets. Definitely, if you have any questions about the consumer portion, Citizens Utility Board has a whole ton of information about what to look for and which ones might be a little sketchy. So they're definitely the advocate to go to make sure that you're protected when you're making those choices.
Yeah, and they're a great resource. I'm glad you brought up the Citizens Utility Board, too, because they have a great website. They're also a great resource, Jen. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, clean energy bill has to pass. I mean, this is just common sense legislation. Should we call our lawmakers? I mean, do I need to start baking blondies for Kelly Cassidy again?
Yeah, I think that's something that influences her a lot.
Right. She's the best. We love Representative Cassidy.
Yes, but definitely making sure that lawmakers know that they need to address the climate crisis immediately. In this package that environmental groups are working on is the way to go. I mean, this we got to get this done. So the more we do it, and I know there'll be rallies or different actions that happen as we are getting out of COVID. So definitely looking for those as well. And I've been really proud, especially of the youth leadership. I mean, there were the climate strikes just before the pandemic, and the way young people are getting involved. I mean, this is literally, they are seeing and will see terrible impacts during their lifetime from actions that they had nothing to do with. So they definitely are eager to get worked on the climate crisis and changing our emissions.
Well, I thank you as always for your time, Jen. I love talking to you. Clean air, clean water, open space. Jen is the executive director of the Illinois Environmental Council. And where can we go to learn more about the IEC and everything that you do, Jen?
Sure. So we're ilenviro.org, and that's our handle on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, just look up Iowa Enviro and you'll get lots of great information and to-the-minute items on what's happening in the state government, city government, anything to do with the environment in Illinois.
Jen, thank you so much. Have a great day. We'll see you soon.
Thanks.
That is Jen. You got it. That's Jen Walling, the executive director of the Illinois Environmental Council. Again, her website, their website is ilenviro.org, the Illinois Environmental Council, clean air, clean water, and open space. Do your part to save our environment. All right. The Olympics have started. I'm excited. Paul, you're a big Olympic fan. Well, you're a big sports fan.
But yeah. I'm a big Olympics fan, though.
I am, too. God, every 2 years, summer or winter, whatever it is. I get excited to watch. I'm excited to watch these games. I'm glad they're happening. Jerry and I were talking yesterday. We were still unsure of if it, 'cause Tokyo said 2 days ago, the IOC, well, we could still pull it. We can still stop it. And all these athletes are already there, you know, and they started. You have an update for us.
Oh, well, not much of an update.
I mean,
all right. So spoilers for those U.S. Results and whatnot. So we know that the U.S. women's softball team won last night against Italy. I think it was 2-0 was the final there. But we know that the U.S. women's soccer team lost their first match to Sweden today, 3-0.
But that's okay.
It's okay, yeah. It's just round robin play.
Yeah. Round robin. We still get the gold, right?
You would still, yeah. Yeah, I believe so. I mean, I'd have to break it down. It's a weird turn. It's like a 12-team tournament. So yeah. I'm assuming the top two from each are the top maybe like 8 total out of 12 advance to the medal round. I don't know, though. But it's just one down, 2 more to go. They just got to win the next 2.
There is an awesome documentary. Have you seen LFG on HBO?
No, but I can guess what that stands for.
You can guess.
Okay, let's go.
Let's go. Yeah. With the little, you know, push in the middle there. So, yeah, it's called LF, as in Frank, G. I'm careful there. And it's about the women's U.S. soccer team.
Oh, okay.
It's outstanding. So Megan Rapinoe is the main voice behind it. Because
I was trying to think of her name, but yeah. The last World Cup run that they had was amazing.
Oh, my gosh. I know. Yeah, Megan Rapinoe, for those saying, I know everyone knows Megan Rapinoe, but she's got the purplish hair. Standout player. She's kind of the main voice of the documentary, but then they interview some of the other players, too. And it really is. It's about the women's U.S. soccer team, but it's also about equality and equity and fairness and racial and social justice. And another main premise of it is the fight for equal pay.
Yes.
And then they break it down, you know, and saying
because they're way more talented than the men for their sport, but they don't get paid enough. And they're one of the biggest draws in women's soccer.
Absolutely. They sell, it was something like 10 times the amount of merchandise that the men do. They've won more games. They play more games. They win more games. They sell more merchandise. More people buy tickets to their games than the men's team. And that's not, I mean, our men's team is awesome. That's not to put down the men's team. However,
you can put down the men's team. They didn't even make the World Cup last time around.
I know.
You can rip them all you want.
I'm trying to be nice, but yeah, the women's team is better than the men's team in every single way, you know, in skill and ability, monetarily, I mean, everything. And they still get paid a teeny fraction of what the male athletes get paid. And this goes into it. And it's so cool, Paul, because they interview all the players, all the people involved. The only people who wouldn't comment on it are the United States Soccer Federation. But they did have some of their attorneys commenting.
I think one thing that will help that along, though, towards equal pay is women's soccer is becoming more popular. I think the NWSL, National Women's Soccer League, is expanded this year.
Yeah.
They're, you know, I think with the Chicago Red Stars play at the park in Bridgeview.
Yeah.
The Fire used to play it. So, I mean, it's growing bigger and bigger. And so if that could have more support, I think you'll start seeing more people gravitate towards U.S. women's soccer.
Right.
And I still can't believe, though, that they're just not paid the same.
I can't either. It's an absolute travesty. And it shows, you know, the U.S. Soccer Federation, their headquarters, one of their headquarters, is in South Loop in Chicago, obviously, off 18th Street. But then they had protests out there with people. And, you know, it's always cool to see your city either in a documentary or, you know.
Well, especially when you can be like, hey, I know that place.
Right. It's like, wait, I used to live right there.
Yeah.
But then, of course, they're protesting.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, Okay, well, that's good. You know, yeah. Santita always says, you know, protesting is, you know, a form of expression and a way to get things changed and a way to get things done.
Yeah.
So speaking of Santita, she'll be back with you on Friday. I'm with you one more day tomorrow. She is in France. She joined us yesterday, Paul. She was just, Santita's just remarkable. And the way she tells a story is, you know, just her poise and her elegance and her grace. And she's just such a class act. And she was telling the story about how Reverend Jackson received the Medal of Honor from French President Emmanuel Macron day before yesterday. And so they were continuing the celebration. And she called and said, I'm going to come on the show and talk about the ceremony. And I can hear everybody in the background. I said, you're in the middle of a party, aren't you? And it was 10 o'clock our time. She said, oh, yeah, it's, you know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon here. So they were it was right after the celebration, but just the way she described how before the ceremony, President Macron said, I want to meet with Reverend Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, okay. So they were all waiting. They thought it'd be 10, 15, 20 minutes. It was over an hour that they were just meeting behind closed doors. And I said, that's like a history lesson. When you're sitting with Reverend Jackson and he's telling stories about marching with Martin Luther King, I'm like, that's a history lesson. Right
yeah,
there.
That's amazing. That's neat that the president blocked off like that much time, too, because I'm sure it was like, oh, it's only going to be like a 10-minute thing.
Right.
And it's like, no, I want to sit down. I want to be with him.
Presentation. So. And then, as she said, as he was addressing everybody, you know, there's a crowd and family members there, too, and most of the Jackson family was there. But he called Reverend up on stage and put a chair right next to him. So he was turning to him, kind of just addressing him,
mm-hmm.
and then the crowd, which is, it's a really feel-good moment, you know, which is really neat to see. So
well, we were talking about the Olympics, and, you know, Reverend Jackson gets the Medal of Honor, the you know, it's already in the medal count. We're leading.
Yeah, that's
Chicago
right.
leads in the medal count
there
right
you
now.
Go. Chicago and the U.S., right, leads mm-hmm. in all. So, mm-hmm. Paul, thank you so much. I will see you tomorrow.
You.
It's Andrea Darlis. I'm in one more day for Santita. Thanks to everybody who made today's show possible. Cliff Nellis and Dr. Dennis Deere with the Lawndale Christian Legal Center. Jerry Riles, of course, our friend here, who went out on a limb on Santita's show saying that the White Sox are going to win the World Series in 2021.
I hope he doesn't jinx it.
Oh, I hope not either. Oh, yeah, it's like the Sports Illustrated cover.
Right.
I don't think so. Jerry's word is usually pretty gospel, so we appreciate that. TJ Crawford, the director of the Garfield Park Right to Wellness Collaborative, talking about the new roller rink and community plaza. The community plaza opens on Friday. Roller rink will be open for the community by next summer. And Jen Walling, our friend, the executive director of the Illinois Environmental Council. Tomorrow, another great show planned for you. We're going to tell you about the Wonder Museum. We're going to talk to the director of the new Chance the Rapper movie that features the Chicago Community Children's Choir. We're going to talk to all those folks tomorrow. So it's Andrea Darlis in for Santita Jackson. Thank you so much for being with us. Be safe, be healthy, be well. Keep it tuned right here. 820 WCPT, Chicago's Progressive Talk. Joan Esposito's with you this afternoon. All our great programming, so don't touch that dial. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you tomorrow.